Well, would you look at that? It's Ben Fredrickson. I'm Chris Raby's show again. It's a Ben Fred Friday on a Thursday on New Year's Eve. It's actually, I guess, the get the hell out of my face 2020 and go away because I never want to see you again. Bring on 2021. It has to get better from here, right? Addition to the show. How does that sound, man?
I like it. Yeah, it's very short and brief, so that's good. I prefer just good riddance 2020. Kick rocks, see you never. That kind of thing, but certainly glad to be moving toward a what will hopefully be a more optimistic and uplifting 2021. I don't know that it'll be like flipping a switch. That's probably too naive. However, it's got to be better than the year we just left. So I'm looking forward to that.
I'll go big picture to start. We both work in sports. Sports such a part of our daily lives, but also the fabric of the St. Louis community. When this thing started, we kind of looked toward sports and we said, oh, it'll be great. You know, baseball will bring people back together, will be a respite from this, or the NBA and NHL playoffs, or college football, college basketball. I think we've learned over the last 9 months, at least I have, they're not nearly as important as maybe I thought, but there has been some good in ways that maybe I hadn't considered. Big picture, how have you seen sports be a part of everything that's gone on here since March?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. And I think there have been kind of two ways to look at it. And one was the way where, hey, this will be these games, these teams will be a way for us to kind of step away from a tough year, you know, with the pandemic. And it will be a distraction. And at times it has been that, right? I mean, Yadier Molina getting 2,000 hits and Cardinals, you know, legend Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina working a shutout on Waino's 39th birthday. Those were moments, you know, Dylan Carlson being promoted where you weren't thinking about COVID. You were thinking about this is a cool thing to watch. And so we saw that, right? We also saw, I think, and this was more true for me, that really what sports became was a microcosm of what we were going through as a country. These leagues were trying to figure out the best path forward as safe as possible. They were making little and big decisions every day based off of risk versus reward. I don't know what better way to explain that than the rapid shift of the conversation around the World Series, which went from, hey, they pulled it off. This is pretty remarkable, all things considered, to there's Justin Turner maskless running around the field with the championship trophy spreading COVID potentially. And we saw that the Dodgers had more outbreaks after that. You know, that's kind of the nutshell for me is we were constantly kind of tugging and pulling and pushing on should we be doing this? How should it look? And basically I think sports were kind of doing what everybody else was doing, trying to do what it does best in the best way it can. And it's certainly not perfect when you're trying to do anything through a pandemic. Is it better than the alternative? I'd argue yes. And I think for the most part, you know, leagues have kind of tried to figure out the best way possible, but you just know, and we've come to learn as watching college basketball, especially, that there's just going to be hurdles and there's going to be detours and there's going to be pauses. And you don't have to, you know, completely shut everything down. You have to revisit it and you have to mind the protocols and you have to be smart and you try to move forward. But that is kind of the reality. It wasn't a big distraction. It wasn't a go, you know, you didn't get to check reality at the door this sports year. It was baked into it and it was the same as everything else.
You are in Columbia, Missouri, where you watched Mizzou and Tennessee last night. Mizzou falls to a very, very good Volunteers team. Of course, no bowl game for the football team and Eli Drinkwitz because of COVID outbreaks. Still, though, I think it's been a positive year for the entire Mizzou athletics department. Certainly, I think, for the football program, for the basketball program. You tell me, how would you assess the year, both on and off the various courts and fields for Mizzou?
I think there's positivity in Como, and as I'm recording this here, you know, in Columbia after that Missouri's loss to Tennessee on Wednesday, you know, there is a vibe around campus that things are moving in the right direction. Yeah, the football team wanted to play in that Music City Bowl, get a chance to have a winning record in Eli Drinkwitz's first season. The COVID numbers kept up too high. They had to bag it. One of many bowl games that got bagged because of this exact same scenario. I know Iowa fans are disappointed in that, and they're mad that Mizzou players were allowed to go home for the holidays. However, that was not what caused the outbreak based off of what Mizzou's saying, depending on it, you know, according to its contact tracing, there was the kind of this germination of the virus before that, before those players went home. Whatever, you know, COVID cancels games. We've seen it all across college football. The bowl games that are not playoff level are mostly a wash this year anyway. They're kind of bizarre. There's no win totals. It was a mess. So, you know, yeah, would they have liked to play in that? Sure. Does it mean all that much? No. But I do think you have to look at Missouri getting 5 wins out of an all SEC schedule in a year where, I'll be honest, Chris, I thought they were a 2-3 win football team. I think Eli Drinkwitz found a quarterback in Connor Bazelak, who looks like he's going to be pretty solid for years to come. He'll have competition, as he should, in Tyler Macon, the young man at East St. Louis. He's recruiting well. He's secured what should be a top 25 class in his first full recruiting class. He's got some of these seniors who got, you know, that extra year of eligibility by playing this year. He's got some of these guys coming back because they want to be a part of what's going on. There was the big win against LSU, you know, when LSU was ranked in the Tigers' third game, that I think really opened some people's eyes, and they took care of business for a long stretch after that. Now, it didn't end the way they wanted to. They didn't compete against Georgia. They didn't compete against Florida. There was a reminder that what they have to do in the SEC East, and they had such a messed up and thinned roster that they didn't really compete very well at all against Mississippi State in the season. That hopefully they hope that wouldn't be the last game of the season, but it was. And you have to take a big picture view. They're moving in the right direction with a coach who, remember, was kind of the end result of a chaotic coaching search, Chris. I mean, they had other names on that list before Eli Drinkwitz emerged, and I think they're very glad they got him. In terms of hoops, yeah, Missouri got waxed against Tennessee, 20-point loss against what looks like a Final Four team in the Volunteers, picked to win the conference for a reason. However, the Tigers entered that game as one of 7 major conference teams left in the country that had played 6 games and not lost. They've beaten 2 ranked opponents. They have to kind of figure out some offensive issues before they continue this season. They've got to get their guards, Mark Smith and Drew Smith, going. They got to find a way to hit some threes, but they do play really tough defense, and they got a deep roster and they're experienced. So I think they'll shrug this one off and hopefully use it to find some ways to get the offense ignited. We'll see how they respond to adversity. But 6-1 with your only loss being a team that very well could be in the Final Four, ranked 7th in the country, probably should be higher. I think there's still plenty of upbeat vibes about Konzo Martin's team as well.
You know, I have to give people credit. Usually people in general just want to be angry, and I think the reaction has been pretty reasoned to the disappointment of Mizzou not being able to play in the bowl game. This is just a part of life now and a part of the way that things are. And aside from some of the normal internet dorks who get in the mix when they probably shouldn't, I think it's been good vibes for the most part. Everyone's been pretty understanding about this.
Well, I mean, I don't know how you could not be at this point. I mean, I get this from some fans who, you know, they want to know what was the breach in protocol and when did it happen and who can be blamed and who should be fired. And I'm like, look, I said from the beginning when the Cardinals were getting, you remember way back in the beginning of this, when the Cardinals were getting crushed nationally for being the team that nearly, had to get shut down during the Major League Baseball season, that the role of COVID cop for sports teams was going to get tiresome pretty quick. At the time, the Cardinals were the first team that had went through something like this, and it was national news. They were a big brand. It was playing out, you know, during the regular season. Well, now when a team gets shut down, it's barely, you know, above the fold. And that's, you know, in a newspaper term for it's on the bottom half of the newspaper, or perhaps inside. I mean, the SLU women's basketball team, Chris, is shut down for the third time right now. And no, it would be crazy to go around going, oh my God, you know, who needs to be fired at SLU women's basketball because there's a COVID outbreak? No, you know, we don't say that when an employee gets it at our place of work. We say, oh my God, we hope they're okay, and we hope that they're I'm not going to have side effects from this thing. So to have a different approach toward college and pro athletes, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I get it. You know, and the Cardinals, I think, were an example to a lot of teams, especially in baseball. Like, if you're not really following the protocols, this thing can bite you and it can spread quick. And I think the league kind of did a pretty good job of really tightening things up a little bit after that. The Cardinals, I don't think they want credit for that. They probably deserve some because they were assigned to the rest of the league that if you're slipping up, it can get you. But at the same time, you know, I don't know how we can hold athletes to some ridiculous standard that we're not holding ourselves to as a country. And we don't have to get into the arguments about the pandemic, but we're not exactly, as Americans, killing this thing in terms of how we're handling it. So, and the idea that American athletes are going to be this example of handling it perfectly, well, that's not realistic. And I've tried to kind of have that approach from the beginning. But also, as someone who wants to see sports continue, I think what we have to do is like what we're doing across the country and with businesses and churches and family gatherings. You be smart, you follow the protocols as best as you possibly can. You don't take unnecessary risks, but you also continue to try to find a way to live your life as normally as you can within, you know, the expert's advice. And is that perfect? And people might disagree, and that's okay. You know, but I do think sports has kind of been an example of how to kind of try to thread that needle. It's not easy. It's messy. But the effort is there. And I know that people are enjoying getting a chance to watch sports. It looks goofy sometimes without fans in the stands. And, you know, it's weird with the fake crowd noise. It was really nice to see some more folks at Mizzou Arena on Wednesday. It's nice to be able to see a few more folks getting into Chaffetz. But, of course, now the Billikens are shut down. It's just it's the give and the take. It won't be back to normal in 2021, but we should be moving in that direction, and that's a really good thing. And I can't wait. God, I really cannot wait until ballparks can be full, until you know the Cardinals are playing in front of a packed house and the Blues, and it will be emotional for me because it's like we saw what it was like. I never thought I'd see what it was like to see it when there aren't people there.
So as we close up 2020, get ready for 2021. SLU puts things on hold, as you alluded to, because of the COVID outbreak. Illinois back in action on the court this weekend. It is New Year's Eve. I guess as a quick aside, in terms of keeping things in perspective, I am, for one, glad that we can all embrace the fact that New Year's Eve has been and will continue to be the most overrated holiday on the calendar. Dan McLaughlin loves it. He has a very controversial opinion of holidays, Halloween being his number one on his holiday power rankings, which is an abomination, an absolute terrible take. But maybe a silver lining of this terrible year will be everyone stays in and watches Ryan Seacrest or whoever tonight and says, you know what, we never again in our lives need to pay $150 to go stand in a crowded hotel barroom not being able to drink out of plastic cups, Ben.
I've been anti big New Year's Eve celebration for a while now, but
big ball drop keeps getting their claws into people.
Yeah, I also don't drink anymore, so that makes a difference in that too. So paying $150 to go anywhere to me doesn't make any sense.
To go be annoyed by people,
but no, I'm usually an at home. My wife and I have become at home New Year's Eve people, and we usually all volunteer to babysit for our nieces and nephews. We got them on both sides, but we usually volunteer to babysit so their parents can do something.
Build up like some goodwill for the following year by doing that too. That's very smart of you guys. You killed two birds with one stone.
You know it. Yeah. Banking early goodwill for next year's Christmas. You know, it's totally a selfish decision, you know, but no, that's kind of how I play it. I recommend it to folks. Once you start doing the at home New Year's Eve, then you're really not going to go back.
100% agree. So all of you that have been sucked up by the lobbying efforts of Big Ball Drop, just, you know, sit on the couch tonight. And here's the secret too. You don't even need to stay up until midnight. You don't have to. Like, the clocks will still change. The world
Chris. Don't make any guarantees.
Knock on wood. I will be celebrating with the people in Barcelona, Spain tonight. So at about 7 p.m. Central, I will say Happy New Year, and then I'll be content to go to bed if I feel like it. Let me ask you, Ben, on a Ben Fred Friday on the Chris Fraby Show, about the St. Louis Blues. He did it again. Doug Armstrong, we talked about it last week. The GM's ability to move, kind of operate in the shadows and continue to make moves to add to this team. We haven't seen the Blues yet over the last 4 or 5 years since I think they've been legitimate cup contenders and then, of course, have won a Stanley Cup. Really have many issues with the salary cap or with big pieces of the franchise and the community, both on and off the ice, departing. And obviously, still some I's to dot and T's to cross with the Mike Hoffman news, but it seems like another classic Doug Armstrong move that kind of, if not took people by surprise, I think was a pleasant surprise for Blues fans.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wanted to know what Army was going to do with that cap space money that was going to be freed up by Alexander Steen's retirement. We didn't have to wait long to find out. He works this kind of stealth deal, and not just him, obviously the Blues front office works a stealth deal where they've got Hoffman to kind of agree to a tryout with a bit, kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge agreement of a contract coming after that. And it looks pretty brilliant. I mean, he is the kind of scorer the Blues need, Chris, with Vladimir Tarasenko shelved. And hopefully Tarasenko gets back to action this season. But until he does, they needed some legitimate scoring help from some sort of forward. And there's few out there who can score like Hoffman can. A bit of a gamble, really, considering the, you know, the off-the-ice headlines that he has generated in the past that shouldn't have to hang over him forever. But he is going to have to, I think, prove here that that won't be an issue. I mean, we're talking about a player who got traded in 2018 because his then fiance had such a feud with a wife of a teammate that the team basically decided
that
they decided they had to get rid of him.
Was and is like the weirdest story ever.
Chris, I try not to, you know how I do things. I try to not, just grab one thing and run with it. I've read every story I can about what happened between Hoffman and Erik Karlsson and their respective, their significant others. I can't figure out what happened. There are stories that blame it all on Hoffman, the Hoffman side of things. There are stories that blame it all on the Karlsson side of things. So the only takeaway I can come without having been there was that a feud between two players and their significant others got so bad that the only thing the team felt like it could do was to trade one of them. and they had basically separated because it was tearing things apart. And that's anytime you bring on somebody who has been in that equation, I think you're taking some sort of a calculated risk. The Blues don't need unnecessary drama in their dressing room. They've had drama in years past and it's turned the team into cliques and they finally got all that ironed out. But if Hoffman is, if that's behind him and if he's appreciative of this opportunity to join a really good team that has a legitimate chance to win the Stanley Cup, then this should be a chance for the Blues to benefit from maybe being willing to take a shot on the guy when other teams were finding reasons to drag their feet a little bit, whether it was in what they wanted to pay him during the pandemic pinched financial times or just kind of being unnerved by what had troubled him and his, his effect on teams in the past. If he can leave all that stuff in the past, then I think it could be really good. I mean, I just point back to Doug Armstrong and what he did when he got Ryan O'Reilly. And you remember at the time, back before Ryan O'Reilly was the Blues captain and the guy who played through broken ribs to help the Blues win the Stanley Cup and the guy who I think he sleeps on the ice. He's there so early in the mornings, the hardest working guy on the team and one of the best players on the team. Pretty good combination. Before he was that guy in St. Louis, he was the guy who was traded from Buffalo as, remember the knock on him was that he had, quote, fallen out of love with hockey.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Losing sucks that bad.
Dude, I remember talking to Ryan O'Reilly on a teleconference the day he became a Blue, and it was like people were asking him, like, so do you love hockey? Like, what kind of player are the Blues going to get here? And now this Hoffman situation is different. However, Armstrong seems to have a pretty good gut when it comes to knowing who's going to be a fit for this team. You saw it in the pickup of Torrey Krug. I think he's going to be a great fit. And I think you saw it clearly in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. He's That will go down as one of the best trades in St. Louis sports of all time. And I think you'll see it here. So if Hoffman can bury all that stuff, start a new page and not look back, then the Blues can really, really benefit from adding him.
Yeah, Doug Armstrong, for me, a long time ago, earned the benefit of the doubt clause and don't have any questions about his fit within the team. And I always just, man, again, it's another thing that has become clear over the course of this year. The fan question of this guy just, does he love it? Is he doing it for the, like, I'm going to ask you if you love being a medical device salesman, or if you do it because it's a job and you're good at it. And people have bad days. People take that to the office or to the rink, like regardless of if you're a pro athlete or, you know, if you're selling insurance. And I think it was refreshing to see and think about that, Ben, Ryan O'Reilly being honest about that. And then you get out of a crappy situation into a good situation. And like any of us, if you're having fun at work, you tend to produce a lot better. So I think that the Blues environment, at least for now, I'll be hopeful that, you know, the Blues culture is one that, you know, people want to be a part of. And that's why guys are coming here as much as the winning on the ice.
Yeah, I think they know that the Blues are going to spend the blue. They're going to be supported. The fans love the team. It's a great city to play hockey in, and they can win at the highest level. So if you're looking for a place to go, then that's checking a lot of boxes. And you're seeing, I think, exactly what you said. Guys are getting opportunities. You know, Jordan Binnington came out of nowhere to be a starting goalie. Ryan O'Reilly on a refresh from Buffalo becomes the team captain. I mean, there are a lot of stories of guys who have, you know, found really turning points or breakthroughs in their careers in St. Louis. And I think that is attractive. I think that's a great point.
Binnington's another guy who's spoken openly, Ben, about being like, there were times in the minors when I was like, I might be done with this.
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's crazy what can happen when you get the right mix of opportunity. And also too, I think one thing guys appreciate with Chief is that it's pretty no nonsense. If you do the job and you work hard and you do what he wants you to do, you'll get a shot. And if you don't and you lose your shot, you're going to understand why you lost your shot. It's not going to be like politics. You're not going to feel like, well, I didn't get a fair shot. He's pretty cut and dry. And I think players, they might not love it all the time, but they do appreciate it at the end of the day.
A number of them might be afraid of him at times, which isn't necessarily a bad thing either. Let's touch on a couple more things, Ben, before we let you go. It's Benford Friday on a Thursday on the Chris Raby Show. But we close out 2020 and look towards 2021, thinking about, again, some of the big picture, some of the themes of this year, some of the big sports stories. You have had some great perspective, I think, in the Post-Dispatch this week, you and your colleagues, as we try to put this year into perspective, we try to evaluate and we try to remember. Give me a couple of good things, feel-good things. You wrote about five of them, so give me your favorite story of a feel-good story.
Well, there's one kind of off the field and one on it. On the field, I think that, you know, to me, I think this is a positive thing. I know it didn't end the way people hoped, but I thought the rise of the St. Louis Battlehawks was one of the pretty cool things we saw in St. Louis this year. And I'm hopeful that because the league is under new ownership with plans to return in 2022, that it will be a story that continues, hopefully, as similar as possible to the team when it left. We'll see about that. But I just thought St. Louis definitively proving the NFL's kind of talking points wrong was pretty cool to see. It really started as a way for the city to say, hey, you know, that's not what we're about. We will support a team that wants to be here. And then it turned into something that wasn't just about bashing Stan Kroenke. It was about supporting a team that wanted to be in St. Louis. And that was cool to see. I still wish that would have reached that third home game where they would have played the team that, well, Wildcats or whatever that team from Los Angeles was named.
Upper Deck Open.
Yeah, Upper Deck Open. And, you know, it was fun. People got down to the dome. They got to tailgate. You saw the footballs flying around downtown. It's a great football city. And it's a shame what the NFL, the light that it cast St. Louis in. But I thought it was cool to see St. Louis answer that. And then off the field, I think one of the biggest stories of 2020 that probably didn't get enough attention, and it was a really big moment, was the progress of the relocation lawsuit against the Rams. Dan and I talk about it a lot on here, but I don't know that enough people are talking about it nationally or even in St. Louis. I mean, when the U.S. Supreme Court told the Rams and the NFL, no, we're not going to push this into arbitration, which is, you know, would have been private behind closed doors. We would have never found out what really went on. When they said, no, we're not doing that, and it meant that this was going to either reach a trial or be settled, then it was a big deal. I mean, there's a court date scheduled for fall of 2021. Depositions are underway and will continue for months. And if there's not a settlement reached, and as 2020 comes to a close, I'm not aware of any being worked on, then this thing will play out in court and we'll find out what really happened. And it won't be, you know, Kevin Demoff talking on the radio. It will be these guys in a court where they're under oath, and that's going to be significant. So I think that's a huge story in 2020, and it will be a big story in 2021 as well.
Oh man, 2021, I think potentially too. Stan Kroenke will be dealing with the fallout of his football team getting into a lot of financial troubles amidst a global financial crisis. What a difference a year can make for a team in the NFL like the Rams, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I know he's got a lot of money, but he's also spent a lot on this stadium, and he's paying for these legal expenses because of the agreement he signed before this lawsuit came about. So, you know, I'm curious what the NFL fears could come out from this lawsuit, and if they will try to settle it in order to keep some of those things from being public record for future relocation discussions. I really do wonder about that. I can't imagine they want this to play out in court. So I would assume they're going to try to settle it. We'll see, because the folks in St. Louis have made it sound like they're not all that interested. But when this thing launched, it was pretty much like they wanted to see it through to the end. Now, has that changed since then? They don't talk about that stuff, but it'll be really interesting. So I it's not over yet. It moves slow. I know people get tired of kind of the granular updates on it, but it is a big story, and it's inching its way along. We should also mention too, Chris, the fact that, you know, another big story here on the not you know, happy side is just, I think, and we should mention it, the loss of some Cardinals icons, the loss of some St. Louis icons. I mean, everyone, you know, we saw it in football with you know, Kevin Green. We saw it in baseball with obviously Lou Brock and Bob Gibson, Jim Hanifin, Larry Wilson. There were some true star power that shined in St. Louis that went to a better place this year. And that, it's almost hard to put it all, that list together and go, man, these would have been losses that defined the year. If this would not have been a crazy pandemic year. And I don't want to see any of those get, you know, kind of second billing, because there were some true icons that we parted ways with this year that hopefully when we get everybody back together again, we can kind of try to send them off the right way at a game.
Something that doesn't really sink in until people are back at the ballpark and, you know, we don't get to see Bob Gibson or Lou Brock, so to speak. You know, that is when it will start to sink in. Ben Fredrickson wrote about some feel-good stories in the Post-Dispatch and at stltoday.com. Let's talk a little bit about what you just said in a roundabout way about Stan Kroenke and the dilemma that owners and organizations not only are facing right now, but could continue to face for years to come because of the year 2020. And, you know, an owner having a lot of money and fans maybe not fully grasping or compartmentalizing the reality of what it means to own a franchise and the things that we'll see and start to see be very real. Up in Chicago, where I am right now, the Cubs had to dump Yu Darvish's salary. More moves like that will be on the way. And I think the immediate reaction for fans is, how can that be? If you're Tom Ricketts and you're worth billions of dollars, you know, you should be committed to this team. You shouldn't have to dump salary. And it's hard, I think, to see the owner's perspective. Sometimes it's hard to see the player's perspective. When there was a stoppage in baseball, we heard people say, these guys are being paid to play a game. I go to work every day. You know, they should just play. So, point being, this is going to continue to happen. Who knows what will happen with Yadier Molina, with Adam Wainwright. But, you know, the harsh reality of the situation and the trickle-down will be that a lot of teams are going to make decisions that they probably never imagined they would be in a position to make. Do you understand the reaction from fans? Are you bracing for reactions in case financials lead to the Cardinals, for instance, having to part ways with a guy like Molina or Wainwright that's been a face of the franchise? Because that's going to become commonplace, I think, for a lot of teams around sports.
Yeah, I completely understand the reaction of fans, and I get it. And I look, owners didn't make, in any sport, didn't make the money that they made in previous years. In 2020, when you play a 60-game baseball, when you play a 60-game season and there's no fans in the stands, you're not going to be able to compare those revenues to what you did the years before. I think the fair question to ask here is understanding that, and understanding there could be some effects of that, obviously, as there would be in most businesses. is there also, you know, isn't there also a way to say, well, business was really good for all the years before that, very good in the recent years before that. How can things just be drastically terrible after one bad season? Maybe if you solely treat the business as something that doesn't take into account the overall value of the business. It's crazy when Scott Boras is sounding like the reasonable person in the room, but he did point out at winter meetings this year that the Mets sold for an MLB record amount during this pandemic. The valuation of baseball teams ain't changing, and there's going to be a sports boom on the other side of this. However, there is real and understandable hesitancy about what 2021 looks like, and I think that to me is the bigger reason for pause than what happened in 2020. If owners were told, look, you're going to have a normal 2021, 162 games, good to go, no problems, then we wouldn't see this kind of hesitancy to do anything and this willingness to offload contracts. There's real uncertainty about what 2021 looks like for good reason. We saw how contentious that negotiation of a 60-game season became. They still haven't figured out. They can't even figure out the DH will be in the NL yet. And we're like 2 months away from spring training. This has reached the point where I don't think that anybody knows what 2021 looks like. I think they got a rough idea, but it's going to be hammered out and it's going to be contentious. And then, by the way, after that, Chris, CBA has to be renegotiated. And who knows what that looks like. So I think owners who are increasingly looking down the line are going, man, there's some turbulent times that we're in and that are ahead. So now is not the time to be committing a bunch of money. And I understand that from the business side of things. However, if the goal is to get folks back in the ballpark as soon as possible and give them reasons to show up, leagues like, the National League Central ain't doing it. Are you going to, if you're wavering about whether or not you're going to throw your money at Cubs season tickets, you're probably less likely to do it now than you were a week ago. They've dealt their best pitcher. They've dealt a catcher. They let Kyle Schwarber walk. They're a worse team. The Reds, they dealt their closer. They're not going to bring back Trevor Bauer. The Brewers let Ryan Braun walk. The Cardinals let Colton Wong walk. Now we'll see I don't think they're going to stop there. The Cardinals should be looking around saying, hey, we're division favorites or close, and we haven't done anything except let our two-time Gold Glove winning second baseman walk. That shouldn't be a reason to say, let's not do anything. It should be, hey, if we bring back Yadier Molina and Wainwright on sensible short deals and find a good deal, a good bargain to upgrade the offense, whether it's in the outfield or, I think the best way to do it for them would be to do it with the DH if they get one, and then buy more time for their outfield experiment. Then they've got, kind of a reset opportunity in 2022, but there's still ways to go out and seize this division in 2021. I think most fans are being realistic. I mean, there's always going to be those who want the Cardinals to commit a record amount of money in an offseason where no team is doing that except the Padres. But there is a sensible way to improve this team that doesn't require bank breaking moves. And I think fans deserve that. The Cardinals say they want to contend every year. Right now, they're a worse team than they were when they ended 2020. The team that beat them and knocked them out of the playoffs has gotten a lot better. So I understand some of the frustration, sure.
I had Derek on earlier this week, and he said, one of the considerations, though, should be that despite all the challenges right now, the Cardinals are in a unique position to maybe go the other way, take advantage of this buyer's market, take advantage of maybe the trade market, and even if they have to stretch a little bit compared to what you would like to after having no revenue come in, they will be one of the few teams that's positioned when this is over to just start raking it in and to be in a position to then, not only have money coming off the books, but have money hopefully flooding in from everywhere it usually floods in. So maybe the onus should be on them to be aggressive right now when nobody else is going to be, when a lot of teams don't even know how much money they have to spend.
Yeah, buying low is, the term, right? And it makes sense. It would make sense. I mean, I can understand why the Cardinals don't want to commit a lot of money beyond future years. They want to kind of get a chance to make some significant moves in 2022. It makes sense if they actually do that. We'll see. But to me, the value play now is short-term deals. You can go out and get – if you get a DH in the NL, you can go out and get Nelson Cruz That solves a lot of problems for this lineup for 1 year. And then you look at it longer term after that. But there's going to be deals. There's going to be offense to be had on short, relatively affordable deals. And that's what this team needs. What the Cardinals need is power, pop. And there's going to be a lot of that in excess because a lot of teams don't need it like the Cardinals need it. So they got to find a way to get some. And then I think they're crazy if they don't find a way. If they let Yadier Molina and or Adam Wainwright sign somewhere else for something that's not ridiculously more than what the Cardinals deem, that's crazy. If it comes down to $500,000, that the reason, the difference that those guys are wearing another team's uniform to finish their career, that's bad. That's a bad business move by the Cardinals. I don't care about projections or any of that stuff. If that's what it comes down to, and we'll know the numbers eventually, then that's going to reflect poorly on a franchise that, you know, told us a couple seasons ago that they had to give Matt Carpenter a rushed extension because they wanted him to finish his career in a Cardinals uniform. I don't know how they're going to explain that one away.
Ben Fredrickson, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Okay, before you depart in 60 seconds, I need you to be a part of my Thursday list. And all I need from you is on the spot, your top four road trip snacks. I know you've been on the road a little bit driving around Missouri and, you know, safely traveling for Mizzou basketball or to spend some time with your wonderful family. So I need your Mount Rushmore of road trip snacks when Ben Fredrickson hits the open road in this great country.
Yeah, this is, I know this one way too well. Unfortunately, my wife is shaking her head as she hears me prepare to break this down. Number four, I'll go in reverse order. You really didn't tell me this before right now, so this is sad how quickly I can do this. Number four would be just a straight up Kit Kat. Always good for any time.
Straight up Kit Kat.
Yep, not extra large, just the four piecer. You know, snap them out, snap it in half.
Do you break them or do you bite into them like a serial killer?
Snap it in half and then eat two at a time. Number three for me would be the double decker. They're rare. You got to find them. They're usually on the bottom rack. I used to work at a gas station when I was growing up in Sedalia. They're usually on the bottom rack of like your local, kind of near the cash register, the double decker oatmeal cream pie. Not two of them. They have to be the double decker. They're very rare. If you can find one of those.
Very rare. It's like a double
really
rainbow.
Exactly. Well said. And then number three, I would probably go with.
So number three, this is your second favorite. Because you're operating in reverse order.
So wait, this is two? Okay, this is two, yeah.
This is the second best. This is the silver medal.
I started thinking about double-decker oatmeal cream pies, and I kind of blacked out.
Makes one of us.
Number two is the Fritos, the barbecue Frito twists. You know, like.
Okay, we have disintegrated into madness. We have reached anarchy levels of conversation.
The twisty honey barbecue Fritos. Those are straight money. And then number one,
Ben, hang on.
Go ahead.
Now, before what I can only imagine is going to be like fruit by the foot is your number one road trip snack, you have given us a perfectly acceptable candy bar. You've given us an item that you say yourself is very, very rare and very hard to find, which on a road trip is not necessarily appealing to me. So I was still kind of on board, but then you give me the Fritos. And one of the things I like about a Frito is that it's just it's a clean, easy snack. But you go with the one-off type of Frito that will get that red powder all over your car, all over your everything. So I get out of the car and, you know, my black sweatpants all of a sudden look like they've had a dance with the devil. So I'm a little apprehensive about your top pick, and I just wanted to kind of take a breath before you gave it to me and maybe let you reconsider those issues that I've taken umbrage with.
The good news about the honey barbecue Frito twist is that you've got hand sanitizer in your car these days. So you can actually pump the hand sani straight after the Fritos.
You just pump it into the bag.
On your hands afterwards. Get that some of that residue off. It does get a little grimy when you're going through the Fritos. You're not gonna like this number one.
All right, I'm ready. It is your list, so I'm sorry.
Listen, there's a hard to find better deal than a gas station pre-cut diagonally sandwich from like the Landshire, the great brand that is like Landshire. You got to check the expiration date. but if you can get like a turkey bake, if you can get like a turkey bacon,
oh my God,
gas station Sammy, that's money. You grab one of those, grab a Kit Kat, grab a bag of the honey barbecue.
Oh my God,
Fritos twists, and it's basically.
And then if it's a full moon, you might find the oatmeal cream pie.
If you want to top it off with the double decker oatmeal cream pie, that's a meal. I mean, a hearty meal. That you're getting for a decent price.
It's like hitting the Powerball. Ben, it's your list. But again, to need to include the caveat of you've got to check the expiration date. That for the functions of a road trip.
It's just a veteran move, Chris.
Yeah. You've got a steely stomach. But for the functions of a road trip, I'm generally like, I'm not buying like a jar of milk at the gas station and then settling in for another 4 hours before I'm going to get out of the car again. And you're kind of dancing with the devil, I feel like. But
this is America, Chris. We stop at...
You went Landshire diagonal, yes. Cut turkey, yes. Bacon, refrigerator, yes. Case, gas station sandwich as your number one road trip snack.
Correct, yeah. And unabashedly. If Landshire wanted to sponsor this podcast, I would sign up with glee. I've been a fan for years.
Just for the record, this is in no particular order. I would go, I guess I'm a little pot calling the kettle black, but I would go Gardetto's.
Those are solid.
I would go a McDonald's Fountain Diet Coke. I would go,
Nick Saban eats an oatmeal cream pie every morning, okay?
Either Reese's Pieces or peanut butter M&Ms. And the anchor of my, it's no double oatmeal cream pie that, you know, you can only find every seven stops. And
yeah, you can get those.
Yeah, you're going to need a gas station shower after your you're going to need a truck stop shower after your list. And then for number four, ask your lovely wife tell her to give me one for my fourth that will undoubtedly be better than any of your four offerings.
Says she's a big fan of the peanut butter M&Ms. So your list is already better for her than mine was. She was not pleased that I mentioned my love gas station sandwiches. That's supposed to be like a secret, but I'm a proud champion of. She likes trail mix, like the basic trail mix with the.
That's a great one. Great one.
You want to get one with not so many peanuts, but yeah, sweet salty mix.
There it is. We just bodied your list in about 45 seconds, but you know, Ben, it's your list.
I will challenge anyone. 2021 resolution. Go to a gas station and ask them if they have double-decker oatmeal cream pies. Tell me that that's not the best thing you can find at a gas station if you're not in the mood for a gas station sandwich. And tweet me if I'm wrong. @Ben_Fred. Tell me. I dare people to try a double-decker oatmeal cream pie and tell me you don't like it.
You cowards, do it.
Ask behind the counter. Don't even look for yourself. You'll have to ask them behind the counter.
Muster up some courage, kind of slide into the gas station, and since they're such a rare commodity, it's almost like finding gold bullion. Just kind of out of the corner of your mouth, just say, hey, buddy, you got any DDOCPs? Kind of use the code word. And I hope you find your double-decker oatmeal cream pie today, Ben, and I hope that for all of our listeners, 2021 is the gas station turkey bacon sandwich well within the confines of the expiration date, because we have had a stale 2020. How's that for a closer?
Heard that. That's a perfect send-off, man. Happy New Year to you and to everybody who listens. I love doing these with you and looking forward to hanging out more in 2021, my man. Hopefully with plenty more things to talk about, more games played, not canceled or postponed. So congrats on getting through it, everybody, and let's have a better year ahead.
Amen. Be safe, buddy. Talk to you later.
Sounds good, man. See you.